Blog Talk Radio.
Denise Griffiths is your partner in success. Tune in each Friday as virtual assistants, industry expert, web developer, and online entrepreneur Denise Griffiths interviews industry experts from one end of the internet to the other. These expert entrepreneurs freely share their business building knowledge and provide practical guidance that will show you how to build and grow your own very successful business, be it online or traditional brick and mortar. Now, ladies and gentlemen, your partner in success, Denise Griffiths.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the show. Today, I'm delighted to welcome Jay Speier. He is a speaker, a writer, and has been an educator for more than 30 years, isn't it, Jay? It's 30.
Yes, it is.
Successfully helping people achieve their goals in memoir writing, email issues, cross-cultural communication, and presentation skills. For fact fans, Jay was on the faculty of the Art Institute of Pittsburgh, teaching photography, communication, and nonlinear script writing, among other subjects. After 25 years, he decided to leave education and run his own company, Legacy Road Communications, full-time. As a speaker, and I love this, an untrainer, he still gets to stand at the front of the room and tell people what to do. I love that part, too. He has just taken his act on the road. I guess you're a much-in-demand speaker these days, Jay. So Jay is also finding himself in demand as the speech doctor, adding humor and clarity to presentations in the unique style of the individual presenter. He's accustomed to putting words in people's mouths from years of writing fiction and screenplays, so this talent comes fairly naturally. Jay is also a member of the National Speakers Association and is the president-elect of the Pittsburgh chapter. He's a member of the National Society of Newspaper Columnists and the Western Pennsylvania Genealogical Society. He is also the author of two books. His most recent one is Cat Got Your Thumb, and the one before that is called The Stories of Our Days. And he created the story system, The Guide to the Methodical Memoir. We're going to be talking about that today. So good morning, Jay, and welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Good morning, Denise. Nice to be here. Nice to be with you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. So you are the author of a brand new book called Cat Got Your Thumb, and you have a really interesting story. Can you take a few minutes to tell our audience a little bit about yourself and chat a little bit about your latest book?
Well, the book has been out for a few months, maybe even close to a year, but it always seems new to me because I'll pick it up and read each chapter is an article that I've had published either in my newsletter or magazine or a newspaper, and it's kind of refreshing to look at it again after you haven't seen something you've written for a while. It's also dangerous. Sometimes you look back at something, I wrote that, oh my God.
Yeah,
but
what was I thinking? Oh, that was really brilliant. Yeah, you have those moments. And sometimes
have those, yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's hope but that it's more that.
Yes, I've always liked to write. I was always a reader. My mother read to me when I was a kid, so I think that's where I picked it up, just a love of words. And I got used to standing in front of a room talking to students and leading them, guiding them. And of course, they showed me a lot of things too. I learned a lot of things by teaching, some of which I share in anecdotes. And anecdotes seem to be just, I learned that that's a really great way to illustrate something, and the fact that an anecdote can be used for multiple purposes, not just illustrating one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the first essay in Cat Got Your Thumb does. It's the title of the first essay. And I was holding a friend's cat, trying to protect it from her overeager dog. And the cat panicked, and from my trouble, I got my thumb bitten by the cat.
Mm-hmm. Cats do that.
So what can we learn from this?
Well, you can't corral a cat, I can tell you that much.
Pardon me?
You can't corral a cat. I have cats. Trust me, I know.
I have two. They're my office staff. I think you have an mm-hmm. office staff of felines as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I have owners. I don't know how much, you know, help they actually are. They hinder me often, but I wouldn't miss them. I wouldn't miss having them for the world. It's
oh, I agree.
They're a very important part of my life.
Animals in general. You sound like an animal person in general.
Mm-hmm. Very much.
Yeah, I am too. In fact, the stories in the book, many have animal backgrounds. It's all about communication in one form or another. It might be spoken, might be written, might be body language, might be even communication between animal and human, because that does go on. But that's the area that fascinates me, is interpersonal communication.
Mm-hmm.
And how even interpersonal communication over distance, which is really fascinating.
And increasingly important.
I keep trying to drum that into my audiences, the fact that I talk about email a lot, and we're going to talk about social media as well, which a lot of parallels there. Have you ever heard of Albert Mehrabian?
No, I can't say I have.
He's a communication researcher, and he came up with often quoted figures, I call it the 55-38-7 rule, where in some cases, under some circumstances, fully as much as 55% of the communication message between two people can come from physical movements, sometimes called body language.
Mm-hmm.
As much as 38% can come from tone of voice, pitch, volume. As little as 7% can come from the actual words. Now let's assume for a minute that can be applied to email. If you are writing an email to someone, all they have are the words on the screen that they're reading. So suddenly that 7% has to do 100% of the work. And I have to ask them, are they up to it?
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's often misquoted that I want to clear this up right now, if you don't mind. The 55-38-7 rule applies to anything being said that involves opinions or emotions. You're looking for a disconnect. You're looking for the words to say one thing and the tone and body language to say something else. For instance, your words might say, that was a fascinating meeting, but you're rolling your eyes and looking at your watch. You know, there's a disconnect there.
Sidling towards the door.
But if all you do is say those words on a screen in email, that's all they have to go by, so that's what you have to work with.
So it's very flat, and you have to be very, very careful about how you express yourself.
Exactly. You have to be good at it. And in business communication, which is what I primarily talk about to my business clients, naturally, there are places in email for, depending on whom you're sending the email to, it could be something lighthearted, but in any kind of business communication, I don't believe that you should be using emoticons, the little smiley faces. In personal email, you can do anything you want in personal email. But in business email, that might be the only connection you have to an outside client or vendor, and you don't want to blow it.
Right.
So it takes special care to craft. You actually have to craft an email.
You're right, and I'm so glad you're covering this, because I mentor and teach a lot of people that are new to the virtual assistants industry, and we rarely meet our clients or even each other. So everything we do is through email, or it's, you know, through Facebook, but largely it's email. And one of the things, and I'd love to get your opinion on this, one of the things that I'm constantly drumming into people's heads is you cannot start an email with a thought. You have to take the time to do the courtesies, dear so-and-so, how are you? And then continue on, and then think about it. Check it, spell check it, and just make sure. But, you know, these emails that go back that, send me a very big, it may be a terse line, well, I need you to change this in this particular sentence, or I may need you to go into this page and do this. I can't tell people enough, please don't do that. It's rude.
Yes,
and they keep
exactly.
doing it. It's very, very rude. And then they wonder why their clients don't like them.
you need a salutation. You need a greeting. You need a salutation.
That's exactly right.
Even if it's hi. Now,
right. A quick hello.
I will. We can maybe back off that a little bit by, let's say you have a rapid fire series of emails going back and forth. Now, then it's
exactly.
Like a volley. It's almost instant messaging.
Right.
Then
and
you
don't
can
have
sort
to
of
do the hi hello.
Right. Mm-hmm. That would be repetitive.
But that first hi hello has to be in there as far as I'm concerned.
The initial
contact, I get an order from somebody, I get a little testy.
That's one. I have a list of do's and don'ts of business email that people can get for free if they sign up for my newsletter. And
okay,
the
where did
they
go?
One, they go to jayspeyer.com, jayspeyer.com.
Okay.
And there's
I'm putting
an article
in the chat room right now.
You can also get there by legacyroad.net. They'll both take you there.
Okay.
The very first thing that I have on the list is do use a greeting. Don't just plow right in.
Mm-hmm.
Because people do think it's one person's economy of language is another person's abruptness.
Exactly right. And I live in the Deep South, so, I mean, that's important even when you're running into somebody in the Walmart. You have to take the time to say, hi, how are you? Excuse me, down here it's how's your mom and them. You know, you have to have all of that in there. It's a Southern thing. But, you know, they're critical. It's part of the human communication process down here. And email, to me, is one of the terribly overlooked issues that, as online professionals, we all tend to kind of blur those lines between courtesy and professionalism and trying to get the job done. So
I
think it's very, very important that people pay a lot of attention to how they're communicating with people, even though it's ostensibly just on paper. It's really not. But, you know, it's easy to shoot out a quick email, say, do this, and talk to you later. It's really a bad idea.
Especially since these emails cross cultural lines.
Yeah,
even
and state
between
lines.
North
I'm
and
in
south.
The South. It's a difference, you know.
You have
You're
the
right.
South. There's a cultural thing in the South where there's everything just goes at a bit slower pace
right.
than up here in the North. It's cold up here. We tend to move fast.
Right.
In the South, you tend to be you're still from the agrarian culture. We're from the industrial culture,
mm-hmm.
so that we tend to be more businesslike and speedy. Not that you don't get things done there. Of course you do, but there's that initial. When I was in Atlanta for a series of meetings several years ago,
I know where you're going with this.
I found myself. Well, I'm interested in accents, of course, and
right.
I found myself speaking. Now, as you know, that urban Atlanta, midtown Atlanta, does not have a very deep, twangy Southern accent. They
no.
just talk a little bit slower. They're just in no hurry
mm-hmm.
to finish a sentence. And I found myself slipping into that.
Yeah. Get on the phone one day with somebody in Birmingham, Alabama. You will need a cup of coffee and a pillow because you're not going to get through that conversation anytime soon. It's just the way it is. So I'm just warning you right now.
I love that idea. Well, the fascinating thing about Atlanta is there's only one word they're in a hurry to finish, and that's Coca-Cola. They pronounce it Coca-Cola.
That's right.
Which I find fascinating because guess whose corporate headquarters is in Atlanta?
Right. Did you go to the museum? It's fascinating.
No, I didn't have time. It was just strictly school meetings, and then I was out of there.
The next time you go, make that a trip because it is absolutely fascinating.
I'd love to see that.
Oh, it's beautiful. And it really is, and for entrepreneurs everywhere, it's such a study in advertising. The whole thing is just, you go back from the very, very early days, they have, you know, their old posters and they have all of their old advertising material. It's astonishing to watch where they've started and where they've come from. And frankly, I wish they'd go back to where they started, but that's just me.
What do you mean where they started?
Well, you know, some of the advertisements these days I find just borderline offensive. But that's just, again, that's just me. But some of their early advertising and just the way they went about it was just fabulous. I mean, they had some brilliant minds at work there.
Oh, advertising has evolved quite a lot over the years. And now it's a little more raucous and in your face because there's so much competition to get your attention.
Exactly. But they're the king of branding.
I loved teaching about advertising because it was a reflection of society. Advertising never advanced beyond what was going on with society. It only mirrored it. So people would feel at home with what they were saying about the product. And so you can see the evolution of how they treated ethnic minorities, how they treated gender issues, age issues. It's fascinating to watch that.
Absolutely. Well, maybe if you get a chance, it is. You need to go there, and don't pay attention to the Coke that's coming out of the fountains, which is also pretty cool, but really look at how they branded themselves over the years, and it's a lesson. I was taking notes. I was the only person in a room full of hundreds of people, and I was writing things down. So that tells you all you need to know about my mind.
Wait, back up. They have Coke coming out of the fountains?
They do. They have one area where it really looks like a fountain, almost like a fountain that's coming up out of the ground. And then Coke is being spewed literally feet. I mean, I want to say 4 to 6 feet from these fountains in a complete circle, and it's going into little cups on these bars. So it's fascinating to watch. And I'm probably not describing it very well, but it's beautiful to watch. And then you go take the little cup and you drink it, and another cup magically appears and the fountain turns back on. And it's just, I don't even like Coke. I was just drinking it so I could make the fountain work.
I'm thinking if other...
You've got to go back to Atlanta, I'm telling you.
What if they advertised other products the same way and had, like, oatmeal coming out of fountains or something like that?
Oh, my gosh.
This could be taken in some tricky areas. We better move on.
Yeah, I think so. But let's go back to email because that is so important. It is something that I'm constantly talking to my team about, and I catch myself doing it. I really do because I'll be in a hurry. I'll shoot out an email to a team member without saying good morning, and then not only did I not gain any time, I wasted time because I have to go back and apologize. So you really have to pay attention to how you're speaking to people as opposed to at people in email, I think, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
You mentioned having to go back and do it again. That's what one of my clients wanted me to come in for, to keep their staff from having to send emails more than once because they didn't do it right the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Or had to correct something or left something out. Now, you can't do this with every email, naturally, because we send a lot of emails during the day, but we have to put ourselves in the shoes of the person receiving the email. Not just how would they feel, but are they getting all the information? And you could do it with bullet points.
Mm-hmm.
You could do it with something called inverted pyramid, where you front loaded with all the pertinent information, and then it gets less and less important as you move down. That's how they write news articles. Then the editor
can
chop off for space.
That's
probably not a bad idea. And if it's too long, then either you make it a document, print it out, put it in an envelope, and mail it to them, or call a meeting. Because sometimes you can't put too many things in an email because they might not do anything with it. Because they won't know what to do first.
That's a very good point. And another thing about email, and I'm sure that you have something to say about this, is they get passed around, and they get passed around sometimes really inappropriately.
Emails never die.
Oh, they not only do they not die, they come back and bite you right in the fanny every now and then. So you have to be extremely careful. To give you a for instance, I had a client that we weren't really doing virtual assistants work for her. We were project managing. And she had what I considered a very unfortunate habit of copying everybody on the team. Didn't matter what the topic was, everybody got that email. And most of the time it wasn't pertinent to that person. They had no business knowing what was going on in there. And I tried to explain to her futilely that every time 7 people read this email, she got charged for it. Because we charge to read emails. That's part of our workflow. And it never seemed she never grasped that. But she was
even when it hit her in the pocketbook.
Oh yeah, and it didn't seem to matter. It was a habit, and she wasn't going to give it up. And I actually sat down and I did some calculations, and I figured that between five people ranging from 50 to 75 to 125 an hour, that she was paying close to $1,000 a month just for people to read conflicting emails. So I would love to hear your take on that.
Well, I'm amazed that the economic backlash didn't change her way of doing things. People just wanted to, they want to cover themselves naturally, but you hit on one of the other points in my do's and don'ts of business email. Send CCs only to people directly involved with the topic. Mm-hmm. Don't CC the rest of the visible spectrum, because naturally there are people who couldn't care less about what the email says. When I'm presenting to clients, I do a little bit of stagecraft. I put myself into the persona of Dr. House. Are you familiar with that TV show?
I love that show. I watch very little TV, but I'm addicted to House.
I have them do a differential diagnosis on this 30-year-old guy, works in a cubicle farm, sits in front of a computer all day, and these are his symptoms. He has tingling in his fingers and pain in his arms, pain in the back of his neck, and stomach cramps, okay, differential diagnosis. And people always say, oh, carpal tunnel syndrome. And I say, oh, yes, that explains a tummy ache. Well, it turns out he has CC syndrome, because he is answering all these CCs that he gets because he's so conscientious, and that's why he's sick. And you can make the receivers of your email ill by sending too many. Well, I don't go that far. But
no, go that far, because actually the client, the former client that I was only with her about a month, she made my stomach hurt. I kid you not. I would get these emails and my stomach would start hurting. And when that started, I said, I'm done. And I quit working with her. It was not going to work. I could not make her see reason. I couldn't in good conscience. I mean, I was charging her a couple of hundred dollars, I think, that month just to read these idiot emails. And what happens is that after a while, you just don't even read the emails because you assume there's nothing in there for you. And then something
your stomach clenches as soon as you see the name.
Oh, my stomach hurt. I mean, I would see it pop up, and actually I started cursing, which is another bad sign. When your stomach hurts and bad words are coming out, this is not good. It's time to do something different. But
I'll have to add that to the list of symptoms.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm telling you, it works. You know, if you see these popping up, you just say, I'm done. I can't work with you anymore. But beyond that, there's a very real probability that very important tasks or information is just going to get lost in the noise. Because people after a while just, I'm not going to read this. It has nothing to do with me. It's 4.5 feet long. Ah, I'll come back to it. And, of course, you don't. So that's another big, big issue. And I like your idea of breaking it out into either smaller emails or getting on the phone.
Yes, there are some things that if you require a nuanced, flexible conversation, then you don't send an email. You actually go and talk to the person.
Right.
I had a group of people who, and one person in the group said that she worked in a place where her supervisor was in the cubicle right beside her. And this company used both email and instant messaging. Now, you could hear her from the next cubicle, of course. Her boss sent this lady an email telling her to turn on her instant messaging. Now, that's working in two different media where she could have stuck her head over the top of the cubicle and said, hey.
Hey.
And people just overdo it. And people have different ways of dealing with email. I had someone tell me that her boss came up to her once and said, I skimmed your email. What did it say?
What?
So she did not like to deal with email. She wanted to hear it from the person exactly.
Right.
Another friend said to me that she was working as a paralegal. Her boss came up to her and said, have you sent out the Framistan contract yet? And she said, I don't know, didn't know you wanted me to work on that contract. And her boss said, well, I sent you an email 20 minutes ago.
Oh,
like you're supposed to check your email every whip stitch to see who wants what instead of doing your actual work.
Wow.
People either over-rely on it or they under-rely on it. They haven't found
and
that
that's exactly thing. Right. And I was going to ask you about that, too, because I have actually gotten to the point where I answer email. I have filters on my email. You know, certain clients go into, they may show up front and center. Other clients, I'll call them back at 4 o'clock. You know, I have set up filters where everything just goes where it needs to go. If I stopped and answered every email, and not just the spam, I get thousands of those as well. But if I stopped and answered, I would get nothing done. So you really do have to set up systems. And it's not a bad idea, in my opinion, to follow yourself around, consciously follow yourself around and determine just how much time you're spending responding to emails that really could wait. And there are programs for that you can find on the Internet. But once you get that under control, your day is under control.
Most people set aside some time to work on email.
Right. I do it first thing.
Might be before lunch or, you know.
Yeah. I mean,
some people get more emails than others, so you have to be flexible about that.
You do. So let's move on to a little bit of the writing part of it. I mean, I understand email, and I'm hoping that people listening to us are taking some very important material away from that because email is so critical. But why is it important on a slightly different subject? Why is it so important that online business people, online entrepreneurs, tell their story? Years ago, 10 years ago, didn't matter. Nobody wanted to know. They wanted to know what the company could do for them, and that was it. Now they want to know who you are and how you can actually help them. So, you know, why is it important that they tell their story? And once they do tell their story, how does this help them connect to their target market?
For one thing, it gives you a talking point. It gives you something to talk about during the initial conversation. You actually know something about the company. It can sort of take the form of a mission statement, I believe, in some cases. And it can also be sort of anecdotal as to here's how we can – actually, the company really should focus on the client, I believe, but it should be illustrative of how the company can help the potential client.
Mm-hmm.
And it, in a way, it humanizes them. It gives them more information. You're not going into a relationship blindly. You actually know something about the entity you're dealing with. And it might take the form of a story about the founder and his principles. It can take a number of different forms.
But these days it's
usually
very
illustrative.
Go ahead, sorry.
It would be illustrative of certain points that, of course, you want to get across, and you would hire copywriters and copy editors to do that because they know how to tell a story. And we all, intrinsically, we know how a story should be structured. I mean, we've probably all seen movies or read books where the story just wasn't moving along the way it should. And something was off about it, but you couldn't put your finger on it. It's usually because the structure was off.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you can tell me the three parts of a story.
Probably, but not right now.
If you give me a minute to think about it.
You know.
Oh, you already know. It's beginning, middle, and end.
Right. Okay. And see, that was just too simple for me. My mind did not compute.
I know. Most people think, they think it's going to be rocket science. No, it's basic stuff. But certain things have to happen in those three parts of the story, whether it's a business anecdote or an anecdote in your memoirs. In the beginning, you set up the situation. You know, what is the issue to be dealt with, and who's going to be dealing with the issue? Any story is always about something happening to somebody. So who are the principals? Who are we dealing with? And in the middle, the problem usually escalates. And in fiction, it always does, in a well-written fiction story. But sometimes that happens in real life as well. And that's what I talk about in the stories of our days, how we can use fiction writing techniques to tell a true story. In the middle of the story, the second act, you might say, of the movie, things escalate. The problem gets worse. Complications, as they call them.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, the situation is resolved. The problem might not be solved, but it's resolved in some way. We have a we've reached a conclusion. And if you are telling something that doesn't have an ending yet, if it's still up in the air, it's not really a story. It's still an ongoing
right.
problem to which you have no solution at the moment.
Right. So, and that's where people would get that sense of unease, like, well, where is this story going?
Yes, or it takes too long to get to the mm-hmm. main problem, or they introduce someone too late. Any number of things can go wrong in telling a story. But it's pretty easy to pick up on that once they're pointed out to you. So many of the things I talk about, I call back of the brain material. It's things we know on an instinctual level or habitual level, but we couldn't verbalize them if we had to. I like to bring them to the front of the brain so we can actually put that knowledge to use and craft your own stories or fix things that are wrong or solve problems in communication. And that's my whole point of getting up in front of people and talking about that, is to sort of bring you around to give you the tools to solve the problem yourself. I'm real big on self-starting, helping people do things themselves.
Mm.
I will write someone's story for them, but
right.
it takes a lot of time and costs a lot of money. I'd prefer to coach people at a more reasonable rate and
mm-hmm.
let them work at their own speed.
Well, yeah, and that just makes more sense. I mean, you can't learn if you haven't tried and fallen down, to be honest with you.
Sure.
So I guess we're talking here about some of the techniques that can help people write their stories. Can you give a 1, 2, 3, where should they start? Obviously with a piece of paper and a pen and an idea. But where do people start when they say, okay, I'm going to introduce myself and my services to my market? I don't know who my market is yet, but I'm going to introduce myself. So what do they do? Where do they start?
I think it should be focused on the client, and telling a story the client will relate to.
Mm-hmm.
Who is going to be using my services? This is kind of hard to do, sort of speaking generally, so we'll have to do that. I can't be specific because it would change for whatever service you might be offering.
Right.
But you would let your own personality come through. That's one of the main things I tell people is let yourself come through. Don't try to write like Hemingway or some of your
yeah.
favorite authors.
Yeah.
They might inspire you, but you should let your own style come out.
Right. And on the other side of that, and I had this problem, I'm a technical writer, and when I first started blogging, I was writing in geek speak. I was
mm-hmm.
writing largely for me, and it made perfect sense to me, and I understood every word I was putting down, but
mm-hmm.
I realized it wasn't very friendly, and I had to really do exactly what you're saying, is kind of, take my own personality and dump it into the middle of the geek speak, which was difficult, believe it or not.
Well, you wanted
it was
to get,
so
you
much
were very
easier
focused,
to,
you were focused,
yeah, very
on,
focused
getting
on the
information
technical.
Out.
Right,
mm-hmm.
absolutely, and then I realized that people, while they do want the information, they also want a little bit of humor and a little friendliness in there. And I had to back off from the purely technical aspect of my writing.
Mm-hmm. I tend to go sometimes the other direction. I put a little too much humor and personality in it, and I have to really say, okay, am I giving them enough information?
Mm-hmm.
So then I have to go back and sort of dial back on some of the extraneous things and put a little more information in there.
Right.
But it's going to depend on the reader, too. Some people want more of the personality and humor, and some people want to just get to the nuts and bolts.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not going to please everybody at the same time.
True enough. Well, what are some of the techniques that people can use? And let me give you a for instance. Let's just say that because I'm in the virtual assistants industry and I'm a web developer as well, I have a lot of virtual assistants on my team or people that I'm coaching say, well, listen, I have a client or I have several clients and they cannot seem to write a good bio. They say, oh, well, you do it. You know me. And that puts my team in a heck of a position. So let's just assume, let me give you a for instance and see if you can give us some advice here. Let's assume that I have a client that just says, now, you do it and I'll go ahead and tweak it when you're done. What are some techniques that you can use that will help tell somebody else's story in their own voice? I mean, how do you speak in their voice? Because body language is a big part of communication, and obviously we don't have that. So what would you tell my VAs?
I would say to at least talk with them on the phone as much as possible to get so you can get an idea of their speech rhythms and some of the phrases that they mm-hmm. pop in to their conversation, whether they know it or not.
Right.
And you could also ask them, in the course of asking them for, say, okay, give me three bullet points, three points that you would like us to get across in your bio. And in doing that, when they're verbalizing that, you'll pick up on their conversational qualities, and you'll get a hint of what they sound like. Because if they mm-hmm. write it for you, if they send you a note, that's one step mm-hmm. removed from what
they're
saying.
Well, that's like seeing a resume. It means nothing until you have that person in front of you.
Sure, because they might not even have written the resume. They might have had someone from a resume
mm-hmm.
service do that.
Right.
And I kind of ghostwrite, or I'm actually finishing up the biography of a local businessman here in Pittsburgh, and it's based on extensive interviews with him, mm-hmm. telling his stories, so I can pick up his speech patterns. And fortunately, he has a sense of humor as well. Doesn't quite match mine, but I can sort of make it go along with his. And family members have read earlier versions of it and said, oh yeah, I can see that sounds like him. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And so you sort of test it by running it by the family. But I think the more you know about the person, the client, the easier it's going to be to write the bio. And
right.
you ask them, okay, what do you want people to know about you? That can throw them for a loop because maybe they haven't really even thought about that.
Yeah, and I think that's what happens. I say, well, you know, I'm just going to give you my list of accomplishments. Well, that's handy dandy, but who is the real you? So
yeah.
You know, that's where mm-hmm. the communication kind of falls down. It's like, we can list all of your, you know, your degrees. We can list that, you know, you volunteer at your church every weekend, but it does not tell people why they would want to do business with you.
You're almost doing an analysis of them. You
yeah,
would have to
that makes sense.
Talk to them extensively and see what the real person is like. And
mm-hmm.
I don't know how much time you would have to invest in that, but to get a good bio, that's what you would have to do.
Right. Well, and that's pretty much what we do. You know, with my clients, I mean, I know them well enough, I can whip out a bio and nothing flat, but I'm finding more and more with people, you know, having constraints on times or constraints on what they think their writing abilities are, so they're just handing that off. Frankly, I don't think they should be handing it off. I think it's an intensely personal thing that they need to at least start and then let us clean and polish.
Exactly.
But I'm finding
that.
More and more people are saying, oh, now you just do it. It's like, oh, geez. So, and
they want to put the responsibility on you.
Yeah, so when it fails, it's my fault.
Sure.
And that's not at all what happens. But still, it's to me, to tell your own story, even if you're uncomfortable with public speaking or even writing about yourself. And I wanted to ask you about this, too. This is a big part of why people are uncomfortable with it. They don't want to toot their own horn. They do not want to be perceived as a salesperson, but they don't understand that you have to market. And your bio is your market piece, and they just it's a leap. It's a very big leap for a lot of people.
I feel the same way. I have to really – I was raised not to brag, not to toot my
mm-hmm.
own horn. That's something you have to – but you have to sort of get over that. But you can do that without – you can do that coming across as informational rather than
mm-hmm.
Bragging.
Bragging, right.
It's sort of a way of, okay, here's what you wanted to know about me. Let's sort of put it back in their camp for a minute, assuming that a bio is answering a question for someone that they just might not have got around to asking yet.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me something about yourself. And you're just sort of presupposing that here's the answer that you wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have to be accomplishments. It can be something, of course, bios can't be overly long.
No. They're typically about 250 words.
Mm-hmm. It could be something anecdotal. You could put a very short anecdote in there.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever do that for your clients?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. What I find with my clients is that Well, not my clients, their audience, because I'm always looking at the bio from the audience perspective as opposed to the client's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can list somewhere on their website or their blog all their list of accomplishments, all of their degrees, you know, all of the different things that they do. I mean, we can have all of that in one spot where people can go read it, they can download it, it's available. However, in today's internet world, you've got about 30 seconds, if, and I don't think it's even that much anymore, to grab somebody's attention, and you need to be very, very good at getting their attention. So that bio, from my perspective, has to reach out and grab their niche market or their target audience, and it has to instantly let that target audience know what's in it for them, period.
Mm-hmm.
What's
right.
in it for them? Why would they stick around and read your blog? Why would they sign up for your newsletter? Why would they sign up for a membership site if you've got one? Why would they be there? And you have to instantly convey a value proposition, if you will. And that's
right.
difficult to do.
Convey the fact that you have information for them, either
yeah,
information
right.
or entertainment or both.
Right.
I try
and
to
they have to
the
like
two.
You. You have to. They have to like you. If they don't like you, they're not sticking around.
No, it certainly always helps. And I can look at my stats on my stat counter for the hits on my website, and I can see
mm-hmm.
the people who have spent some time there, actually gone to the articles and gone to the other parts of the site, and I can see people who have left after they saw what was on the welcome page.
Right.
And, the welcome page, I fully realize that I'm not going to be everyone's cup of tea.
No, nobody is.
I start on my web page with something anecdotal about me, but it shows my storytelling ability.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing I wanted to showcase. And humor.
Yeah,
example.
I read your story about the old phones. I laughed. That was so funny.
It goes back to the weird things that stick in your mind, why I still remember my
right.
childhood phone number from the early 50s.
I know, but where did you put your car last week? Who knows?
Yeah, good question. Well, it's the short-term memory that starts to go first, you know.
That's what they say.
Well, people
yeah,
I've
read that, and I thought that was so cute. I mean, it's a great anecdotal story. Like, I enjoyed it. I stuck around and read it.
Well, thank you. Well, that's what I'm hoping for, that I'm hoping that I didn't want it to look like every other web page that I've seen because
mm-hmm.
other web pages I've seen are so conscious of selling on the front page.
Right.
And I'm right. a little more low-key than that. I'm not that aggressive. And I've had people tell me, oh, you should do something different. Well, it took me a while to get to this web page. I do this myself, so I don't hire it out. So it's something that I
right.
do on my own. And because I like to have control over what image I put out there, frankly.
Mm-hmm. And that's very important. I mean, it really is.
It is. And even the colors that you pick for your website, and this is getting into web design, but...
yeah. Well, I'm a web developer, so I know.
Well, my virtual assistant had some ideas on that. She liked the idea of a plainer, more spare background.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of goes into what where I was headed anyway. So I fully agreed with her and took her advice and sort of tweaked it my own way, naturally. But
right.
And then it comes out as a story. And I even put in an old photograph of myself standing on the running board of my aunt's old Chevy.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the picture was taken in 1952, the Chevy is 1936 or something like that. So it's I look like I'm older than I really am. So. Be aware, the car is not new when I'm standing on the running board.
Well, women would not know how old that car was. Men would. You know, women would just go, oh, that's a cute car. You know, we know nothing about cars, most of us.
Well, they would just know that it's old.
Right. And before I get
yeah.
you know emails about sexist remarks, I'm going to say, I'm talking about me, not just women in general. Don't send me emails.
Oh, I don't know cars either. So it's not just a sex thing. I can't tell cars. I know... I recognize what I'm driving that year and a Volkswagen.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much it.
Yep, yeah. I recognize a Jag when I see it. That's about it.
That
ooh,
too,
cool
yeah.
yeah.
And
some
of those really
dumb-looking,
some of the dumb-looking smart cars, I can recognize those as well.
Oh, I saw one the other day and I wanted to run over it. It was just, I don't know why. It was just a visceral response. I just wanted to go see if it
looks
crunched.
Like half a car. It looks like it's not even finished yet.
That's exactly right. And, you know, I live in a rural kind of little town, and we don't move too fast around here, but it was holding up traffic. And, you know, people were saying, get that piece of junk out of the road.
Well, we were talking about advertising earlier. In advertising, there's a new, I haven't seen it out for a while. I'm not even sure what it was called. It might have been called the Cube or something like that. They didn't even call it a car. It was marketed to 20-somethings. They called it a mobile device.
Oh, my gosh.
They didn't call it a car. It looked like it was totally square. It looked like a refrigerator in a college dorm and on wheels. And people drove around in that. And they weren't extolling all the virtues, all the comfort, the big interior. No, it was a little metal box that you drove from one point to the next, and creature comforts were non-existent. I just thought it was amazing, because that's what the advertisers are very in tune with, the demographic that has the money to pay for those things, the 18 to 45, excuse me, demographic, and that's what they're pointed at.
And oh my gosh!
You just
I'm going to keep my SUV gas burner. I'm sorry. I'm going to keep my big old honking car, and if anybody doesn't like it, they can come chat with me.
And you can look down on them as they're talking to you, right?
Right when I'm
from
backing over their
seat.
Little car. That's right. Don't mess with me.
Ooh, your aggression is coming out.
Isn't it, though?
Uh-huh.
I don't like to be told what to do. I don't think most people do. So getting back to kind of writing a good story, and I know this, I'm going to ask you the question, and I know what the answer is, but do people make it more difficult than it needs to be?
Oh, by far. Certainly they do.
What
First
do
off,
they do?
They talk themselves into thinking it's too hard, for one thing. And one of the things I tell people is that you can do this. Anyone's allowed. You don't need a degree. You don't need a license. You don't need a permit. Everyone's allowed to tell their story. Some people might want to do it orally. Some people might want to write it down. And the thing about telling your own story is you don't have to, it's not necessary for you to go all the way back to the beginning and tell the first story you remember. You tell whatever story is ready to be written.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever's in the front of your head that's aching to be told, that's what you put down. And if you do that enough, pretty soon you've got a whole lot of stories. And
you've
got chapters.
Absolutely. I have a friend who is, she's a friend and a client, and she's called the Journaling Genius. And I'm telling you, she really talks about, you know, doing exactly that. You can go back and do your journals and pick up some tremendously interesting stories that you've forgotten about.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you feel about journaling for business?
I don't do it, frankly, because then it's probably a lack on my part, but I feel like I'm not doing real writing if I'm journaling. I'm usually writing for someone else.
Right.
And if I'm journaling, that's for me.
Oh,
and when I write
for
someone else.
You need to take better care of yourself.
Well, that's for me, too. See, I like to express myself, and I do it for other people. So that fulfills me also.
Right.
And people ask me, have you written your own memoir? Well, no, I haven't. But I have a body of work behind me that I can pass along to my daughter. So I'm covered there, I think. Well, they say, of course, that the shoemaker's children go barefoot. Well, my daughter will have her stories. They just might be fictional. They might be anecdotal. But And I was a photographer for a long time, so I've got a body of work in photography as well.
Oh, very nice.
The great thing about photography is if you sort of get yourself into being visual, that visual quality will come over into your writing. It'll help your description.
Right.
I tend to be a very visual writer, and that's a good thing. The bad thing is I'm a very wordy photographer. But it works the other way. But with a description, that's one of the tools you have for telling a story as well, is description. How do you describe something? Was it like something else? And I tell people to use all their senses. You know, the prime sense we use when we describe something is visual, how it looks. But we have four other senses to deal with as well. So if you can work in, not every time, of course, but if you can work on how something feels, how something smells, how something tastes, you've got other ways of conveying that quality for your reader. So use as many senses as you can.
Right. Well, I know we were carrying on a conversation, you and me and several other people, this morning on Facebook about our cats.
Yes.
And some of those got quite humorous. I mean, they were...
Yes.
I was really entertained by several of them.
That was a pretty good thread you got started there.
Yeah. Well, my cats are tyrants. I'm looking around to see if I'm going to get bit. But you know.
They know when they're being talked about.
Yeah, they do. They're little
mine are nowhere to be seen. They don't happen to be in the room at the moment, which is unusual. I usually have to fight for desk space.
Oh, yeah, you and me both. Well, my husband actually just came home. He's out in another room. His office, all their internet just blew up, so they're coming home to work, all of them. My cats abandoned me. They just said, well, Daddy's home, and off they went.
Oh, they're fickle.
I'm actually, God, yeah. So, but one of the questions that I was going to ask you has to do with body language. And this is going to get a little bit esoteric because body language to me, even though I'm not meeting with my clients face to face, your voice conveys your body language to some degree, I think. You know, when I'm talking with my clients on the phone, I'm happy. I'm upbeat. I'm delighted that they're my client. And they never hear me say, oh, I'm having a bad day. You know, my body language is exactly what they hear from me. I'm bouncing around. Right now I'm sitting on my exercise ball, and I'm bouncing while I'm talking to you, and I'm exercising. Looking out the window, it's, you know, a wonderful winter day, and I'm in love with life. Hopefully I'm conveying that to you as we're chatting, that life is good.
Yes, definitely.
So, and well, I tell people, and I would love to hear your take on this. It's like, listen, I know you're working from home. I know your commute is about a minute and a half. Brush your teeth, comb your hair, put on makeup, get dressed, go into your office as, you know, casual, professional. Do not slouch around in your jammies. It will show. And they don't get
that. It does. You're right. Oh, it's true.
Hello? Jay, are you there? This is Denise. It looks like we lost Jay. Is anybody there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. It looks like we lost Jay somehow. Yeah. Hopefully he'll call back in.
This is Judy, the journaling genius. How are you?
I am lovely. I was just mentioning you.
I did not
take your name in vain.
For a change.
Just so you know.
I think I better go get out of my jammies and put some makeup on.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is a conversation I'm constantly having with people. They say, well, you know, I work from home. I can be comfortable. There's comfortable and there's slovenly.
That's true.
And if you don't feel professional, you're not going to present yourself professionally, even if it's just on the phone.
That's right. I have nice jammies on. No, they're not.
Oh, good.
Like sweat.
Clean,
you know,
jammies.
Not like jammies. Yeah, I put my clean jammies on this
morning.
Right. But I must admit, I don't have any makeup on.
Oh, well. I don't know if I can talk to you then.
Oh, well, fine. See, if I hadn't told you that, you wouldn't know, though. I don't sound like I'm schlepping in my jammies without my makeup
no.
on.
No. It looks okay. I'm going to back to the chat room. It looks like Jay might be rejoining.
Oh,
us.
There we go.
Jay,
yes,
are you
I'm
here? Okay, we
yes,
lost
something,
you there.
Something happened. I got this very weird sound on my end of the phone.
Yeah, I was just chatting away. You were gone. Listen, I invited somebody in from the chat room into the program because I needed to fill some space.
Sure,
waiting for you to come back on. And Judy, you remember I mentioned Judy, the journaling genius, a minute ago, and she actually has a question for you.
Sure.
Hi, Jay. This is Judy. Yes.
Hi.
You mentioned, I heard in your bio that you do help people with their presentation skills. So it's also something I do. Do you do that virtually with people, or do you only do that with people in front of you? And
if you do
it virtually, how do you do that?
I don't do it virtually. I don't see how I could, because I have to look at the people and see what they're doing. And
right. I'm actually working
there.
On some. I came up with some ideas where I have people send me videos, and then I give them a critique on the video, and we have a phone conversation
about it.
That
would be good.
Because it's challenging when you live in this virtual world, and one of my clients is back east. It's a little challenging.
Mm-hmm. Well, video or CD, DVD certainly would work in that case. Of course, you can always post to YouTube these days.
That's true.
Let everyone else see what you're
doing. If you want them, if you want to, you know, may not want the bad stuff up there.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can keep it private. You can
that's
have an
true.
Account that
yeah.
you can keep it private. You can also put it on Ustream. And I believe you can keep those accounts private as well. So there are options for that.
Okay.
Writing that down.
Yeah, but with YouTube, if you already have an account that people recognize you by, just open up another one. Get a junk email account at Yahoo or Hotmail and just get a junk one. That I have several junk accounts because spam is a huge problem in my world. But just use that and keep it private. Nobody will see them, and you can use that as a conduit between you and your client.
Oh, that's a great idea, rather than having to actually send the files back and forth. That's
exactly.
Awesome. Thanks.
Just upload right. them there. And here's the thing, too. You can also annotate them. YouTube has a function where you can annotate the videos, meaning you can make comments or you can hyperlink. There's a lot of different things you can do.
Great. Okay. Thank you.
You're
welcome. This virtual world is really opening things up.
Oh, yeah. Big time. Big, big, big. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
When I first started out on the Internet, well, I'm going to embarrass myself and tell you that I bought a $3,000 boat anchor back in the day, and it was MS-DOS. It didn't go anywhere. But I had to have that thing. I mean, I wanted it bad. So I paid $3,000 for a computer that did, typed for me. That was about it. It was just a really expensive filing cabinet.
It was the typewriter of the TV screen.
That's exactly right, and I was in love with it.
So you embrace technology, don't you?
Oh, yes. I was one of the people standing in line to get a Texas Instrument calculator back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I'm a nerd, and I admit it. I admit it. So, Judy, do you have any other questions or comments about what Jay and I have been chatting about?
Well, I do have to take him to task a little bit about the journaling piece.
Of course you do.
I'm sorry, Jay.
She's going to cut me
this
off.
This was a trap. I feel like I'm being trapped.
Her last name is Peebles.
Completely set up.
It's Judy Peebles. You can email her.
Well, no, I thought it was interesting that you said, journaling is for you and writing is for other people. And one of the things that I do is to put that piece together for people because it really is journaling is, for me, is where all my creativity comes out. That's where I get my stories and my, any of my marketing pieces or any of that actually comes out with me with a pen in my hand, just generally just kind of dumping it on a page. So, and what I tell people is there are no journaling judges. So it's not like an email where you have to worry about, did I write that? Did I spell it right? Is my handwriting okay? That kind of, so you can just write. So I just
it's funny you should say that because when I talk about email to clients and I'll talk in front of a room full of people, I'll say it's judgment day. Every day is judgment day when you send an email because you're being judged because they got nothing else to go on. It's just the words that you have. Journaling is certainly a good exercise. It gets you motivated. It gets your writing juices flowing. And I'm for whatever works for people. I don't need the impetus. I just go. I'm a different kind of writer. Maybe not different, but there's that process of writing where you carry it around inside you for a while, and it's not ready to be written yet. So I'm not too quick to put something down on the page. I want to think about it for a while. And I might jot a few notes. But I tend to, when I write something, I want it to be as close to finished form as possible.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's just one writer's way of working.
Yeah, and I just want to say it's fascinating that you're from the university. It's your University of Arts, University in Pittsburgh, though, right, for the art university? Is your background?
Art Institute of Pittsburgh.
Yeah, my niece, Jamie, went to the University of Arts in Philadelphia and got her degree in photography. So.
Oh, that's what my degree is in as well.
Oh,
back then it was photography multi. It was photography multimedia, but what they called multimedia was stringing a bunch of projectors together and having them all focused on the same screen. That was multimedia.
Right.
Things have changed.
Gosh, I remember when I worked with a company in the UK, and we had one of our projector at that time literally fit in a trunk. It was like Foot Locker size. It was huge.
Amazing.
That was our RGB projector that we had to schlep around the country. Nowadays, you can put them in a briefcase.
Exactly, yeah.
Come a long way.
And you can put it in your car. I mean, this is a very virtual world, and I think we all need to adapt as best as we can, no question about it.
And we've come a long way from 8-digit Texas Instrument calculators, too.
I still have mine.
Do you really?
that Texas Instrument calculator that I bought, I found it in a cupboard the other day. It's worn completely out. The faceplate has peeled away. The buttons are, but it turns on. I can't do anything with it because I can't read the buttons. I literally wore the thing out, but it still turns on. So.
Is that the one that had the red LED readout of the numbers?
I think so.
That was the one I had. Mm-hmm.
I have to go look at that thing and figure out what it was, but I remember it was quite expensive, and I was so proud of it. But, I mean, I used that thing. I carried it around with me for years, and finally it just kind of went to heaven. But I couldn't throw it away. It's kind of like, you know, when you have a favorite pair of bunny slippers and one has a blowout and you just can't bring yourself to throw them away.
I wouldn't know.
Yeah. Well, I know.
Now, a pair of jeans, yes. Okay.
There you go. Well, there's not a pair of bunny slippers that I had for years, and literally I threw them away and I went back and I got them and I washed them, and I don't sew, but I do safety pin, and, you know, I tried everything I could, but finally, and I had to throw them away one at a time. I had to grieve, you know, as part of the grieving process.
Sure.
And that's my story. Now, we all know I'm nuts now, so. Well, listen, Judy, Judy, do you have any other questions, or Jay, do you have anything further that you would like to share before we end the show?
Just that everybody's welcome to come to the website and see what I have to offer, because there are things that you don't have to buy. You can just read the stories if you want. And there's a whole archive of articles as well.
Okay, give us that URL again.
www.jayspeyerer.com or legacyroad.net. Both will get you to the same place.
Okay. Well, thank you, Jay, for your time with your today, you know, with me. I mean, you've given us some really valuable information, and I appreciate in particular the email information. That's so important whether people know it or not.
Oh, it's been my pleasure.
Well, thank you.
People can always send me, I always make this offer to my email clients. I say, please, after presentation, please send me an email if you have any questions. They never do.
They think
we're afraid. Be afraid.
They think I'm going to red pencil it or something and correct it. But I promise I wouldn't do that.
See, and I have this mental image of you poised over your keyboard going, come on. That's all I can get you.
No. Oh, you haven't seen
no,
me
I wouldn't
teach.
Do it either. Well, we've emailed back and forth. I guess I should ask you how I'm doing, but not on the air.
I will tell you later. Okay.
Okay, good. Good. Well, listen, this is the final show of 2009, and I want to thank all of you for being so wonderfully supportive and engage with the show this year. Your interest and your suggestions and, you know, your input before and after the show have made this a really important part of my life and my business, and I'm very grateful for each and every one of you. I will be traveling over the Christmas holiday, and that's the reason there won't be another show this year. But we will return with some really incredible guests in the new year, and I would like to take this opportunity to wish you and yours a very Merry Christmas and a happy, healthy, and very successful new year. Thank you all for being here, and the show will be available for download in about an hour. Merry Christmas, everybody. Bye, guys.
Bye.